Hello everyone and welcome to Curious Emotion. I'm Sam McCormick and today we take a trip to Huddersfield to meet Alice Bradshaw, a visual artist whose work spans many areas, including rubbish, mental health and supporting artists in their recovery from the pandemic. Alice is from Elland in Calderdale. I met her a few years ago when she got involved in Welland, our wellbeing festival in the town. Alice co-created installations and projects with the local community, and I loved seeing how she was able to bring forward the stories and experiences of local people, resulting in a strengthened sense of connection to each other and their town. This episode was recorded a few months ago before the local restrictions and the second lockdown, so I was lucky enough to meet with Alice in person, albeit safely distanced, of course. We met at the beautiful Huddersfield home of Dwell Time, a mental health arts project founded by Alice and the artist she collaborates with regularly. You'll hear more about this in our chat. Let's get into it. Right. Hello, Alice. Thank you for joining me. So we've just had a lovely chat for about an hour, haven't we, before we've done anything? And we're lucky enough to be together but distanced in the same space, which feels very much like a treat. So, Alice, it would be really nice if we could have a little rundown of your work as an artist, what interests you, and some of the projects that you've been involved in.
Thanks for inviting me to have this conversation. So I'm an artist, curator and writer based in Elland in West Yorkshire, and I'm really obsessed with rubbish. Lots of my practice incorporates rubbish, both making stuff out of rubbish and looking at other artists' rubbish. My master's by research at the University of Huddersfield was looking at the value of rubbish in art practice, and I'm really interested in discarded materials, the value of not just everyday materials but of art, and also the dialogue that comes about through talking about value of rubbish in art. And one of the big projects I do at the moment with two other artist curators is called Dwell Time. So the space we're in now is our HQ, Dwell Time Central.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it.
It's a massive space. It's supported by East Street Arts, so they have an empty shop programme, and we're one of their studio holders. So Dwell Time is started off as a publication reflecting on mental wellbeing. We have other strands now of podcasts. We've now got the space. We do a lot of interviews, so not just for the podcasts, generally just talking about mental wellbeing with artists in the community. We've got two issues of our publication out now and currently have an open call for responses to the pandemic that we launched. I think it was possibly the week before lockdown. We were really kind of early on the process. So it was certainly very, really very soon, you know, very early in the pandemic crisis. And we've had a really awesome contribution to that. I think well over 250 submissions to date.
Amazing.
And really high quality and really varied and interesting. And then I'm also on the board of YVAN, the Yorkshire Visual Arts Network, and we're looking at the quality and diversity of supporting artists, and mental wellbeing is obviously part of that. And between my work with YVAN and Dwell Time, we're really interested in the impact of COVID on artistic practice and mental wellbeing, and how all those things interrelate, and the importance of dialogue in that process as well.
Wow, there's so much in there, isn't there? I mean, is it no wonder we've already had a whole hour of just catching up before we even got here.
Just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. So Dwell Time, I'm so interested in, so mental health is something that we work with a Curious Motion a lot as well. And this podcast particularly, I think mental health is going to be probably even more of a focus for us than maybe we envisaged, but you know, because of the pandemic and because of everything that everyone's living through. How did Dwell Time come about? I know that it's quite a personal thing. Are you happy to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. We talk about it in the editorial of our publication as well, because I think it's important to know where it's come from and the personal significance of why we're doing it. So my co-curator Vanessa and I's friend killed himself in 2017. He was a really big advocate of the arts, raising awareness about mental health, wanted us to do something around the issues that he suffered with, which were bipolar and depression, particularly in young men. So we approached what was called Men's Shed at the time, next to Huddersfield train station. They're now called Platform One. We wanted to do a project with them in memory of our friend and to create a legacy for him. And they put us in touch with the Penistone Line Partnership. Unfortunately, the way that the funding came about, we couldn't work in partnership with Platform One, but we did partner with Penistone Line Partnership, and we work with Community Rail as well. And then issue two, Northern and Cross Country came on board, pardon the pun, as funders as well. So we had a portfolio as funders from the rail industry. And issue two was just about to be launched as we went into lockdown. So we, the week before official lockdown, we decided that it wasn't safe to go ahead and we postponed it. And then it wasn't possible anyway because of government guidelines.
Yeah, I was going to say, so Dwell Time has its own website as well. Is that right? Yeah. So that's, you can also access a lot of the publications and information there as well.
Yeah, dwelltimepress.wordpress.com has pretty much all our content on it, or it links to external content like interviews on YouTube and stuff. So there is the PDF version online. Unfortunately, because of the amount of images, it's quite low res, so you don't get the full,
experience.
Always better in print.
They are
available because they're free publications. They are available to post, but because we don't have budget for postage, we ask people to pay that. So if anybody wants any number of copies, they can always get in touch.
I'm just interested to know sort of what you've learned from the work so far.
I think what I've learned, and this is through speaking to people, friends, community, through workshops we've done, is that there's a really dire lack of provision out there for people struggling with their mental health, and people are on waiting lists for really long lengths of time. Yeah. So preventative is definitely an understood best way of working, you know. You try and it's like early intervention with mental health so it doesn't become a crisis.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, with the lack of provision and support, people tend to only get intervention when they're at crisis point.
Yeah.
And that just comes down to funding, I think. You know, I think the government chronically underfunded mental health services for so long that it was already at a crisis level before COVID. And I don't think that they proportionately invested in it with what inevitably is and going to be a mental health crisis as a result of this.
Yeah.
We were talking before this interview about collective trauma, and this is some of the research that I'm looking at now. What we're experiencing with this pandemic is a collective trauma, and because it's not a one-off incident like a natural disaster. It's a prolonged thing. I mean, there's parallels, I think, in history, but we don't have that much kind of knowledge about how this is going to affect us, so it's new territory.
Yeah, sure.
But we do know what a trauma response is like, and people are exhibiting those signs already. So I think that, for me, the arts has got a really pivotal role to play in this. One of the books I'm reading at the moment is called The Body Keeps the Score, and it talks about when we have a trauma response, the Broca's area of our brain, which is responsible for language, shuts down. So they know this from fMRIs, studying people that have been exposed to trauma, they re-expose, and this area shuts down. So the trauma responses in the brain that can be measured light up, and the Broca area shuts down. And hence the terms speechless and lost for words.
Wow.
You know, when we're struggling with words and speaking and expressing ourselves and our emotions, it may be through a trauma response. And I think that speaking to a lot of artists and friends, you know, we're struggling to find the words. And I think that it's because of this collective trauma.
So you're working with professional artists and then community members as well, is that right?
Yeah, so pre-COVID, we work variously with community groups and other artists. So it's a complete mix of different people, and also with our open calls, there's no criteria that anybody has to have form of experience or qualification. So we've published people's work where they've never, it'll be the first poem they've written, and we've published work. So we did a workshop with Creative Recovery in Barnsley, and this one woman said, "I don't think I've written a poem since school. This is the second poem I've written in my life."
Wow.
And it was great, and we published it.
And that
for us is such a lovely thing to be able to do for somebody. And that will sit alongside a professional artist piece of work, and they're given equal placement on the page.
So with your own practice, has there been anything from the pandemic that you've tried that maybe you wouldn't have tried before, anything like that?
Yeah. One of the other projects that I run is Art Lab, that started at Dean Clough in Halifax.
Yes.
So that's a peer support group where artists present their work, and then we talk about it in a really kind of relaxed and friendly, supportive way.
Yeah.
It's not exclusive to artists to attend, so anybody that's interested in that can attend.
Nice.
And then obviously with the pandemic, that couldn't happen live in person. And I tried a few different things and then decided to try doing it over Zoom. So it's a really similar format to the original meetups where artists would present, so they screen share and talk through their work, and then we have a Q&A.
Nice.
And that seems to be working really well. And the positive is, because there's no travel considerations, you know, we've had artists from London and Mexico join us, and it has the potential to be international because of that. And certainly that's how we're continuing with the Zoom meetings now, but it could be going forward that that continues online, even if we get to meet up in person, maybe they can be parallel. I know some other organisers are trialling this kind of dual in-person and live, so they'll like live stream an in-person event for the people that maybe are shielding or live somewhere else. So I think this probably is going to be the future for a lot of stuff.
So where did the interest in rubbish come from?
I think I can trace it back right through to undergraduate studies. There's definitely been this reoccurring interest.
Okay.
And it all sort of became a focus in 2010 when I set up the Museum of Contemporary Rubbish. With a collective I was working with at the time called Contents May Vary. We would curate exhibitions and events and put our own work alongside other, you know, invited artists or selected artists, and I, for my work for the Barnaby Art Market in Macclesfield, was the Museum of Contemporary Rubbish, where I had my own studio rubbish that I was exchanging for any rubbish people had on them. So I didn't publicise this in advance. It was literally, what have you got in your pocket that you don't want anymore?
Right.
Swap some rubbish. And then I photographed all the items of rubbish that I collected in a really kind of like I photographed them so that it was all about the objectness of them, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
So I put them on a metal shelf that had a reflective quality and made sure, you know, the lighting was kind of as well as good as it could be. And that kind of sparked off this whole interest in rubbish and then became my obsession and my master's.
Love it.
And I think, you know, it links in with, like you said, it links in with so many different things, like the environment, throwaway society we live in, capitalism, and, you know, all these systems and the way that the world works. Recycling is an obvious thing rather than throwing away and buying something new.
Yeah.
Recycling is just, or upcycling even, I'm not a massive fan of the term, but it does, it does the job.
Yeah.
So that rather than, you know, using virgin materials and throwing away and creating landfill, use something and make it, you know, make it into something different. And I think my interest in rubbish as well comes from like the minutiae of life, like the tiny little things of every day, and recognising the beauty in something. So, like, I'll go and run on the canal, and if I see rubbish, then I take photographs of it and put it on my Instagram as, like, found composition. So rust I'm very obsessed with. I think it's beautiful.
Oh, nice.
So there's the kind of aesthetic, formal qualities of rubbish, but then it does have this, like, environmental concern and has this social anthropological aspect as well, because at the point that we discard rubbish, we're making this value judgment of it, and I find that fascinating. I did a residency at the Brighouse Recycling Centre that was asking people about their rubbish. So it was a bit of social research as well, really, because if someone was throwing something away, I'd ask them, can I take a photograph and get a little bit of information to put in the museum? It's more kind of acquiring knowledge and, you know, rubbish, information about the rubbish. So they'd tell me why they were throwing it away. And that was fascinating. It was a really interesting project. A lot of it was coming from bereavement. So when someone had died, it was like house clearance stuff. When relationships had broken down and they were moving out, people were throwing a lot of stuff away. Sometimes it was just a large item that the curbside collection couldn't take. And then sometimes it was people were just redoing their living room up and the different colour scheme. But yeah, that whole kind of, what do we value and for what reasons?
That is so interesting.
What was also interesting, because I talked to the staff there a lot, contrary to what used to happen, it doesn't all go in landfill. So that's why they have all of the separated skips. And they have almost like a stock system, a stock market exchange of value to the rubbish. So it's not got a fixed value. It's not like per kilo or whatever. It has a fixed value. It's got its own little stock market depending on demand. One of the good things that could come out of this pandemic is people's appreciation of maybe connections and society and people over material things. You know, we need food and we need shelter. But I think maybe because we haven't had the ability to socialize in the way that we need to as social beings, people will realize how important that is over the material stuff.
I assume dwell time is keeping going. Do you just accept submissions whenever people send them in?
Yeah. So yeah? At some point, if we do a print version of the COVID response, we'll put a deadline on that. For
okay.
obvious reasons.
Yeah. Sure.
And we did say that if we stopped getting submissions, we might it would naturally come to an end.
Yeah,
then
sure.
It slowed down. We were getting about 2 a day on average, okay. and that slowed down to maybe like, I don't know, 4 a week.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still coming in.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, people going back to work.
Yeah, and there's so much change, isn't there, at the moment?
Yeah, and people's time has suddenly become, there's more demand on people's time.
Yeah.
So various different factors means the submissions have slowed down, but we really want to do a print version.
Mm.
At the moment, we're in this kind of R&D phase of the podcast, but there's plenty of mileage to do some work around the mental health impact of COVID,
yeah.
especially on artists.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be our direction moving forward.
Okay.
And platforming voices and supporting artists.
Yeah.
I think, you know, artists have had a really rough deal of this because they've missed out on the, lots of artists have missed out on the freelance grant.
Mm-hmm.
Not the freelance grant, the self-employment
Self-employed one, yeah.
And because we're freelancers, we're not part of an organisation to go on furlough. You know, lots of us have been really struggling. Lots of us are going to have to go into other employment
mm-hmm.
because lecturer posts have been scrapped. And there's a real worry that the artists that are reliant on other forms of income, such as, you know, gallery work
mm-hmm.
and lecturing work, are not going to have that work. So they're going to have to do something else, potentially, that's much more hours for the pay that they need.
Yeah.
May not be able to get any work at all.
Mm.
I think we've been talking to an artist on one of our podcasts about universal basic income
mm-hmm.
and about how that would solve a lot of problems for a lot of people, but especially for the art community.
Yeah.
So, yeah, finding out what the issues are currently for artists and how best to support them is like really the kind of direction that we're going in at the moment. And that's going to come through talking and listening
yeah.
and holding that space for people as best we can.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. That's what we need. Holding, listening, having that space, amplifying those voices that, you know, are often not heard.
Absolutely.
And being there for each other.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alice. Oh, what's the podcast called that you're working on at the minute?
It's called Dwell a While.
Dwell a While. Oh, yes, lovely. So look out for Dwell a While as well. Yeah, and thank you so much.
You're
it's
welcome.
Been a pleasure.
It's been a really, really good chat. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you to Alice for such a wonderful chat. The ideas around value judgments and rubbish and the role of the arts in our collective recovery from the pandemic have really stayed with me. If you're interested in getting involved in any of Alice's projects, please do check out the show notes for all the info. Remember, everyone is welcome. Whatever level of experience you have, Alice offers a safe space for you to connect and express yourself. A big thank you to our funders once again for their support in making this podcast happen. I can't believe we're in December already. New episodes will continue to be out every Tuesday until Christmas. Then we'll be working on ideas for series 2. Do let us know if there's been a favourite episode so far or a topic you'd like us to focus on. This podcast is here for you and we want to include your ideas, so please do let us know. In the meantime, remember to tune into your body, be kind to yourself, and stay curious.